Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Logical Soul Talk. My name is Michael Craig, and I'm your host for this weekly talk radio program that features interviews with some folks I consider to be the best, brightest, and most creative people in the world. Now, during this today at 60 Minutes program, I will ask them about their expertise and work, but I also want to focus on their inner world, the turning points in their lives, their mentors and influencers, and decisions they made that brought them success. You see, as a chiropractor for many years, I discovered that most people, including myself, have an underlying matrix or pattern of what I call hidden decisions that we made as small children or picked up from our parents, teachers, or even our ancestors. And these subconscious matrix decisions form our reality and affect our motivation and our destiny. Consequently, these matrix decisions can either propel us to greatness or lead us to self-sabotage and failure. Now, quite by accident, many years ago, I discovered how to access this matrix of hidden decisions to allow amazing results to happen in my own and other people's lives. And you can get more information on my techniques and methods at www.logicalsoul.com and moneymatrixmethod.com, which is one of the better ones that I use right now. Also, be sure to check out and click on the follow button at blogtalkradio.com/logicalsoul to get a heads up on all our great interviews. Now, my guests were selected because, quite frankly, I find their stories and their lives interesting. I also found out they possess qualities I find rare in an individual, and that is a passion for what they do and a determination to see it through. They obviously have made strong decisions early in life that led them to their current successes and achievements. My goal in interviewing them here is to probe a little bit and discover their pattern of life decisions. This will allow you, as my listeners, to maybe pick up some special nuggets that will add to your motivation and nourish your own seeds of success. So listen and enjoy. After about 10 or 15 minutes, I invite you to call in with your comments and your questions. Our phone number is area code 347-843-4544. That's 347-843-4544. If you want to get called on, simply press 1 to raise your hand. Now, my guest on the show tonight needs no introduction, and he is author of the book Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, which was described by USA Today as being the number one best-selling book of the last decade.
After the please finish your recording within 20 seconds.
And I think that's him on the line right now, so excuse me while I get him. Hello, this is Michael. Okay, I will get back to you. Thank you, Dan. Yes. Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. So I guess you figure by now my guest is Dr. John Gray, and so what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be calling him up, and let's see if we can get this thing on the road here. Okay, so excuse me for the technical difficulty here. I'm trying to get John Gray on the line. And I have to dial out. At any rate, I wanted to say, let's see. Excuse me for a second while I dial him out. Let's see. So we're calling Dr. John Gray.
Hello. Hi, Michael.
Hi, John Gray. I'm so glad you're on the line. I finally reached you. Thank you so much for being on the show today. I was just giving a little brief introduction here about some of the work I do, and I also mentioned that you need no introduction, being the author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and you've got another book out, which I went over back in January. We went over some questions and answers that Helena had sent me about some of the main points in your new book called Venus on Fire and Mars on Ice, which I found fascinating reading, and I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. But before we get started, John, you mind if I call you John or Dr. Gray?
John's fine. Hi. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, John. What I wanted to ask you is, and I think my wife put me up to this because she's read every one of your books, And, of course, she wants to go over everything that you talk about when we have private time together, and it's fascinating stuff. One of the things that she had that she wanted to ask, and that is that your wife, your current wife, I believe her name is Bonnie?
Bonnie, yes.
And she wanted to find out how Bonnie has contributed to your insights in relationships, because, as you know, you're the international expert in relationships, but how has your wife influenced you, and how has she contributed to your work?
Well, each book I write, I do write my dedication to her and thank her and my acknowledgments as being a major contributor to my work. Everything that I write about is helping to give people insights in a practical way to make their relationships better, and I use them in my own marriage. They're all based upon my own frustrations and our own marriage, and then gaining these insights in our marriage has gotten better and better over the last 27 years. We're closer than ever because, you know, I certainly wasn't any expert in relationships. I studied psychology, but that doesn't make you an expert in relationships, I'll
right.
tell you. And it was literally finding out what really worked. And I don't think I could have done it with just being in a relationship, but I was also a relationship counselor. So a lot of the needs and expressions and complaints that my wife would have, my women clients all had the same ones. You know, so
mm-hmm.
it was like I was outnumbered. It's really easy to hear a problem when it's not about you. And so I'm able to hear all these women talking about their issues with their husbands, and I realize these are the same issues my wife has about me. So, you know, I could hear it in a non-defensive way and then figure out ways to, you know, solve those problems. And sometimes it's helping women to understand what's going on in a man's mind, what he's doing. But my wife has been the primary source of helping me understand what's going on inside of women and what works inside of women. And an interesting thing over the years, my books have changed and gotten better and better. My most recent one, Venus on Fire, when we get to it, really has even more practical application because, you know, we're all discovering who we are in this new world of higher stress levels, more uncertainty, more decisions, women in the workplace, you know, roles changing and so forth. And it's literally like the music has changed, we need to change the dance steps. And a part of how I've been able to suggest a new dance steps for men and is in terms of what do men need, often I didn't know what I needed, I thought I did, but it was when my wife would just give me a particular kind of support, I go, wow, that was great, you know, that makes me feel really good, I wouldn't have even thought of that. And vice versa, you know, I've just been able to hear so many women articulate what their needs are when sometimes my wife couldn't, and I try it and it works. So you take that concept, you spend your life, over 30 years I've been focusing on gender differences and developing these ideas, and then suddenly all this new research comes along, which even expands the awareness even more so we can apply more things. So yeah, my wife has been a major contributor to the whole process.
Thank you so much for that. I had to ask that question and get it out of the way because my wife has been wanting to know that, and I think she's on the line anyway today.
Did she read Venus on Fire yet?
Oh, yes. She's made
good.
Some
Because I've had many women come up to me and say, you know, I really appreciate, you know, in Venus on Fire, how much you acknowledge your wife in that book in terms of, you know, I give examples from our own relationship, how she's taught me and helped me understand women so much better.
Sure, I guess she just wanted to say that, so to hear you say
yeah.
it, I guess. That's
well,
one of those things.
I'm happy to do it.
Got to come from the horse's mouth. So
it's definitely a partnership to create a book on relationships.
Exactly, and I love my wife dearly, and she's listening, so I wanted to hear that. And but I tell you, your books have really done a lot for us over the years, and we've read just about every one of them, her more than me. I haven't read them all, to be honest with you. But it really has helped our relationships, and I know you've helped so many people around the world. I mean, you've sold, what, 50 million books worldwide?
Yeah, it's amazing. I was just in Kuwait, and the where they have a very high divorce rate there, and giving some seminars, there were judges that came to me and said that when people come for a divorce, they won't give them a divorce right away. They have to go home and read my book first. And sometimes they don't get divorced.
That's a good acknowledgement.
You know?
Yeah, you know, you're
it's everywhere I go. I go to China, I go to various places, and people have been reading my books, and they love my work, and it's changed their lives, and quite often now I get these people at my seminars who say, yeah, my parents read your book. It certainly makes me feel a bit old, but it's fun.
Exactly. Now, part of what we do on this show, John, is find out what are the patterns of your life decisions. In other words, what were some of the early influences that you had in your life, some of the people in your life who influenced you the most, some of the early decisions that maybe you made as a child that led to your current success or your understanding or insight, things like that. Could you fill us in a little bit about that, who John Gray is, a person?
Oh, well, sure. That's very interesting. I do remember, if I go back, what pops up in my mind first is, I guess I've always been rather introspective and thoughtful, and I remember having sex as a teenager for the first time. I was so excited. I mean, it was just this, you know, everybody, I've been telling people I'd had it. Most guys always said, you've done it, but you hadn't really done it. And then so I had done it. And I remember going over to my friend's house afterwards and staying up the whole night trying to analyze why could something that felt so good not be considered okay, you know, and how could just, you know, getting married, which, you know, to me at that time meant that you sign a document and make a commitment on paper, how could that suddenly make this beautiful act acceptable, and without that, that it wasn't acceptable? So, you know, I've always questioned the social morals and just said, but why? And then when I was a teenager, you know, everybody in my generation back in the 60s was doing, not everybody, but a lot of people were doing drugs. And
right.
Drugs just made you feel terrible afterwards. And I didn't want to do drugs, and I didn't want to hurt my brain or whatever. And right around that time, the Beatles had gone to India to study with a guru, a Maharishi, and they said they were getting high without drugs. So I thought, okay, that's more up my line. Let me get high without drugs. And I went to a course, and Maharishi came to America, and I thought I was going to see the Beatles, to be quite honest. That was a big motivator, but they had just left. But then I met the Maharishi, and I listened to him speak, and he spoke very in a very inspiring way. And I said, I want to, you know, have self-mastery. You know, I got to see an example. I'm a big fan of having mentors, people who are an example of what you want to become like. Because then a part of me says, I want to be like him. And as we're talking about mentors, which I think are so important, role models, I actually go back in time, and the wisdom of my mother, my dad traveled a lot, so because he wasn't around, my mother worked very hard at finding role models for me. She sent me to karate school, you know, because she thought that the karate teacher there was a great role model for me, and I became his, like, student. I went on to be in karate magazines, you know, this is long before the movie The Karate Kid, and then I went on to having my own business, a paper route, and she wanted the guy who managed all the young boys doing the paper routes. You know, she thought he was a good example, kind of a real salt of the earth guy out there working every day, and so that was an example. So I had these role models, and then I had another role model, just people I wanted to be like. I think that was sort of my journey for a while in my younger years.
Wow, that's interesting. I also spent time with Maharishi. I was a TM teacher, as a matter of fact.
I was there for 9 years. I used to help develop those TM teacher training programs.
Right, awesome. Right. We know a lot of the same people, I'm sure. It was interesting. I also expected to see Maharishi at the first lecture as well, so it didn't work out that way. But I did get to meet him in person a few times after that. Fascinating person, and really influenced my life. In fact, my work today is based on a lot of that knowledge that I received then. So it's really interesting to know that you're coming from the same fountain of knowledge, so to speak, and that a lot of what you do is based on that gentle yearnings for the inner life and how to bring that outward, I guess, is the way to put it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the interesting thing is when you become a TM teacher, often they say, now you can't go out and teach this unless you're part of the TM movement. And so when I left after 9 years of being with Maharishi, I kind of went out into the world, and I just felt like, okay, why, I'm not allowed to teach that. And I really didn't want to teach that. There was something that wanted to come out of me, and I didn't know what it was. So that was a difficult time because there was a lot of uncertainty. But then what started coming out is people kept asking me for advice on relationships. It would just come up, and I just had this great information that would come out of me. And so gradually I started teaching workshops about that, and I was married to a woman who had helped me for a couple of years, I started these workshops after I left the TM movement, and she was like a good marketer and a promoter, and we worked really well together, and then we ended up getting married, but not to have a family, or it was more like we're really good friends. And then when I wanted to have a family, we got a divorce because she didn't want a family.
Mm.
And so, but we had a great business relationship, and we developed these courses. And then when our marriage ended, it wasn't as smooth as, gee, you know, we were always been friends. It was, you know, my heart was broken, and she got involved with some other guy, and I was hurt by that and so forth, and went through that whole process of healing my heart. And in that process of healing my heart, that's where I developed the ideas of men are from Mars, women are from Venus, is that I realized mm-hmm. that one of the problems in my first marriage was that there was, at that time, there was tremendous propaganda in the universities and in psychology, and I'd been studying psychology, that men and women should be the same, and it's really something was wrong with men if they weren't, quote, in touch with their feelings the way women were. They didn't talk
right.
about their feelings the way women
were. Right.
And if we didn't think and react the way women did, it was always in that marriage, it was always like something was wrong with me when I didn't relate to things the way she saw them. And to be honest, when I saw her reactions, I thought, well, something's wrong with that. But all of the books were saying the men were wrong. And I just kind of went, wait a second, you know, something's missing here.
Right.
And when that marriage ended, I was able to sort of back up and realize that, you know, I went the wrong direction trying to see that equality, because we should all have equal rights, you know. Equality doesn't mean people have to be the same. And then I was able to shift my direction. And I have to say, it was the divorce that kind of was like hitting myself over the head with a hammer. You kind of wake up and you go, okay, what was missing in that marriage? And what was missing was a lot of this insight that I gradually developed. And have since then, over the 27, 28 years with my wife, has just made it better and better.
Isn't it so true that the diamond is formed under such great pressure? I mean, I've had a couple of marriages myself, and each time, I mean, it's like breaking your heart all over again. It's like the vessel is broken to be formed again. And so, yeah, I can understand that. And you've really turned it around, and you've brought such comfort and such insight to so many people. And I really want to applaud you for that. And as I said, my work as well has been forged in the in those same
yeah.
fires. And so
it's really
a learning process.
It is a learning process. And you know, I'm not saying that everybody should plan to go break your heart, but when it happens, there's always something better down the
Uh-oh.
Road as a result of it. We just have to remember that. Here was a real key, since we're talking about life lessons and changes and so forth. Back when that divorce happened, my first wife.
Excuse me, John. Dr. Gray, we're having a little bit of technical difficulties here. Are you hearing something breaking up when I talk?
No,
or?
You
okay.
sound fine to
for
me.
For some reason, when you're speaking, there's a little bit of a strange glitch going on, but I guess we'll just continue and hope for the best. I don't know. Are you talking through Skype, or I guess
no. I'm on a telephone.
I called your home phone, right?
Yeah, just regular home phone.
Okay. I don't know what the problem is, but I guess
why don't you call me back?
Let me do that. Let me.
Okay.
Let me call you right back, and hopefully we'll get a better connection. I'm sorry for the interruption.
From my side, you sound great.
Let's pick up where we left off. I'll call you right back.
All right. Thank you.
And for the rest of you on the line, if you're listening, please hold on. I'll call right back, and we'll be right back with you in a minute. Let's see. If you're listening online, our number is area code 347-843-4544, where you can ask John Gray a question. We'll be coming up with questions and answers here in about 10 minutes, so hang on and listen to what he has to say, and I'll be right with you. I've got to call him back. Excuse me just one second here. We had sort of a bad line, and I want to make sure that we can actually hear what he has to say. And let's try that again.
Hello, this is John Gray.
Okay, I don't think it doesn't sound any better, but I guess we'll go with it.
Okay.
Can you hear me okay?
I hear you just fine.
Yeah, there's sort of a glitch in my, maybe it's my speakers. I'm hoping that the recording itself is not so bad, but let's go ahead with that. And sorry to interrupt. Let's leave. We were talking about the life lessons and how divorce changes your life
well,
and gives you insights.
Really, my heart my heart was broken. One is that I've been teaching relationship seminars, and here my relationship had failed. So I couldn't go out and do my career. You know, this was something I was developing. So I felt like I was a failure at my work, and then the woman that I loved was now in love with somebody else, and I was a failure in my love life. And I was devastated. I mean, just devastated, triggering all kinds of feelings. And when I, you know, and I write about this in my book called Mars and Venus Starting Over. It's how men and women cope with divorce and move through that whole process and heal their hearts. And once I had moved through that, you know, even after 2 or 3 months of it, I became such a more compassionate person because I had never felt such emotional pain before as an adult. And so I had tremendous compassion as a therapist. Oh, my gosh, I think it should almost be a prerequisite for a therapist to go through a divorce. Just because you have to understand the depth of pain that people go through. Otherwise, you hear people's problems and you think, oh, that's not so bad. But when you're there and you go through it, there's just a level of automatic empathy and compassion. And as I moved through it and became such a better person, a more compassionate person, a happier person, a more fulfilled person, a more confident person, as I went through that process.
We're breaking up again.
Oh, okay. You know, why don't we try Mike calling you? We can try another thing. I'll just try calling you on the guest hotline, okay? Michael, I'll call you on the guest hotline.
Okay. John, I just got word that everyone else can hear you, but my speakers are just having a little bit of a problem. So
okay.
Let's just go continue.
If I
miss a few things during your conversation, I guess I'll just have to ask you to repeat it. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. I'll keep that in mind. So,
I'm sorry.
So anyway, I mean, it's funny that this is happening on a day we're talking about relationships because communication is always going to break down. That's the most important thing for people to realize is if when communication breaks down and you're misunderstanding each other, that doesn't mean you're with the wrong person. And it doesn't mean that you can't make it work. It's that this is just part of life. Life is not perfect. And the closer we get with someone, often it's so much easier to misinterpret them. You get your feelings hurt easier because they're inside your defenses. And It's the irony of it is that someone you love the most has the biggest impact on you. So when you misinterpret them, it has a much bigger defensive reaction inside. So we just have to always give ourselves a little space and trust that, you know, you can still love someone, you can have a great relationship, you can continue to move through things and yet have these bumps along the way. It's part of life. Just like as we're talking about my own life, we're talking about the bumps along the way. I've grown so much from them. It was actually 9 months after I went through this most devastating divorce that I went through because I lost my career, at least temporarily, the divorce, and I was just devastated. And it brought up feelings of that had been buried from my childhood where I had been abandoned for a week and hadn't seen my family and had completely forgotten about it. But those memories had come up as I was doing these little exercises that I teach in my book. And having worked that through, moving through it, doing healing exercises, 9 months after that divorce, all the anxiety left my life, and it has never come back. At least when it comes to public speaking, I'll put it that way. As soon as I go in front of an audience, or even anticipating an audience, I'm very calm and relaxed and happy. Whereas our radio interviews or anything to do with my message, I just feel very calm and peaceful about. Whereas prior to that divorce, I used to have huge anxiety before getting in front of audiences and teaching seminars or doing interviews. I mean, literally my knees would get weak, you know, and my voice would kind of tremble. And all of that went away. It was like literally I had faced my biggest fear and come through on the other side. And nothing is as terrible as could ever happen as terrible as that from one point of view. So people would come to me for counseling, and even to this day, if they're going through a difficult time, I feel compassion, but I also feel happy that they found me or that they're seeking help because I know that with the right help, they're going to be able to move through and become so much more open and receptive to having their life be better. Because truly, from my experience and my past, and I don't always believe this 100%. I can certainly talk like I do. But when you go through these difficult times, they always end up bringing more into your life. And we always end up making our lives better if we stay authentic to the process. Because there's, and that's always happened for me, and all the ups and downs, something better always resulted. But there are these challenging times, and like you say, it's the challenging times that forge us to help us to grow. And I don't think that everybody has to go through challenges extreme as mine, but not everybody's going to be a, you know, a world teacher. You know, I teach in all these different countries. You know, that was my hope and my goal. And again, where did that come from? When you're looking at, you know, how do we form ourselves as a child? I had no idea that I was ever going to be this teacher, you know, around the world and everything, and well known everywhere I go. But here it was. Here I was 18 years old, and I sitting in an audience, and there was the Maharishi, who was internationally known. And I went, I could be like that. I want to be like that. That inspired me. And it was literally like some part of my soul said that you can do that. And then went ahead and did it. So it was, of course, for the first 10 years, I never thought I would, you know, be famous and successful. I was happy just to learn and grow and be like him. My goal wasn't to be famous and successful in that way, but I wanted to achieve the goal of the meditation, which was to become enlightened, to develop our full potential, and I've done that. You know, I feel very, you know, I'm expressing my full potential here. Every day I get to get up and express my potential as a human being and continue to grow in it, you know, become more and more.
You're quite an inspiration, John, and I appreciate the insights that you've given us. Essentially, we teach what we need to learn, and that's such an inspiration to all of us who are going through difficult times, me especially, because I've had some difficult times, and when I push through them, you always learn something. We have a time for questions. If anybody wants to call in, 347-843-4544, and ask Dr. John Gray a question or make a comment, raise your hand by pressing 1, and I can call on you. Meanwhile, John, this is our Valentine's Day show. It's the day after Valentine's Day, actually. How did you and Bonnie spend Valentine's Day, by the way?
Oh, I scored big time. We had a great day. We started by sharing cards, and then the next thing, as I went, and I had already got her some roses, but then I went out and came back with a box of gardenias that I had ordered. What's amazing is when I dated her, I used to always bring her gardenias, and I still remember that was back, 30 years ago. And I would get her gardenias, and even back then they cost $1.50. Well, today you can buy, at one of our flower stores, you can buy a whole box of, I don't know, maybe it's like 50 gardenias, or maybe 100 even, for $20. You know,
wow.
They're just all in a box, and you just buy them in bulk. So I brought home a big box of 100 gardenias, or 50, or whatever it is. And I said, well, these are, she said, oh, 3 would be fine. I said, I know, but now you can put them around the house. I put them around the house. And we can go around to all of our children's houses and give them out to our kids and our grandchildren. So, and to the assistants in the office. So that was a big day. So all day we spent going around giving gardenias out to everybody in our life, our grandchildren, our children, our office helpers, and so forth. Then the next thing is I told her, now we're going out tonight. Be ready at 6:00, which is really fun for women because they like to like not know. And she said, well, how am I supposed to get dressed? I said, well, I'm going to wear this and this and this. And she said, okay. And I wore a suit that she loves that I hardly ever wear, that I wore to my daughter's wedding, one of my daughter's weddings. And I wore that suit and looked really good. And she went, wow, I even put on my English shoes. So I dressed up for her. Women love when men dress up. And we went to a beautiful restaurant with 2 friends. And then at the end of the dinner, that was all a big surprise to her, and she didn't know who we were going to go with. I didn't even tell her we're going with somebody till right the minute when they came. So she was one surprise after another, and then we got there. And then at the end of the dinner, we did a little exercise with our friends, our 2 friends that we were with. They were another couple. And it was, what I love about you. And you go around, you just say to each person what you love about them, and everybody takes a turn. And it was just so sweet to just be able to express my love for my wife in front of these people. She just
that's
loved
so
it.
Special. Thank you. What is the number one secret to keeping Valentine's Day fresh all day, or excuse me, all year long? Because that was one of the things that I said that you were going to cover today. I don't know if I told you, but...
Well, actually, the point, often people discount anniversaries or they discount Valentine's Day by saying that phrase, every day should be a Valentine's Day. And I'm not in that camp. That I think that one needs to have special occasions. Like, if I wore that suit every day, then that suit would be boring. But because it's something I don't do normally, it creates a special occasion. If these were the people we go to dinner with every Thursday night, then that wouldn't have been a special occasion. So there's something about special occasions where it's what the British call gilding the lily. You do a little bit more than necessary. You do a little bit more than you usually would. And that's a special occasion. And men particularly don't need that so much, but women do.
Mm-hmm.
Special is a key thing for them. So why do I need to give her a little card? I mean, she knows I love her and whatever, but you get the card, you go through the procedure of doing all these little things, because to women, they mean a lot. And I remember saying to my wife, I said, what would you like to do on Valentine's Day? And she says, we do everything. We don't have to do anything. I said, okay. And then, of course, I did something, and she was so happy and thrilled and surprised and all that. So there's,
you're always surprised.
A little dance that you do, and because you want to make it special, that makes it more special. And the only way I can communicate that to men, because, see, women are different. They have this hormone called oxytocin. Now, men have the hormone, too, but we never run out of it. And it's the love hormone. You know, it's a funny thing. It's, men say, of course I love her. I always love her. You know, but women are always fluctuating. You know, they of course they love you, but they're loving you more, loving you less, loving you more, loving you less. So they're very insecure about love because it's always changing within themselves. They need lots of reassuring messages that they're loved. And really what we mean by this is not even so much content, but it's actually loving messages, little loving messages stimulate a hormone called oxytocin. And for women, oxytocin is something they lose very quickly, one, and two, it's the hormone that lowers stress in women. The hormone oxytocin does not lower stress in men. It's not a major player in terms of our hormonal buildup. And so these little romantic things, our little expressions of expression, have as big an impact on oxytocin as even a big thing. So I literally could have brought my wife one gardenia. It would have almost had the same effect as those 50 gardenias, except that we can now go around and give it out. And every time she was out giving out those gardenias, she felt, she was being loving and she was feeling all the support she had in her life. And that increases oxytocin levels.
Right. Keeps building the same hormone.
That's right. So on a practical basis, I do want to fill my day up and my year up with lots of little things that stimulate oxytocin. Mm. And this is a key insight for men because men think, okay, I'll do a few big things. And I'll do Valentine's. I did anniversary. I don't have to do it again. But basically, what's the big deal with flowers? I mean, one of the big deals with flowers is they're cut flowers and they'll die in a week, which means that now you have to go back and do it again and again and again.
Right.
The concept there for men is don't think a dozen roses. Think one. Think two. That's all. You know, often a guy will bring home a dozen roses for his wife and she'll say, oh, no, they're too expensive. We're on a budget. But if you bring one, you'll never get that response. You always get oh, that's so nice. Thank you.
That's
and it's
good
the
to know.
Little things that make a big difference for oxytocin levels, and oxytocin lowers stress for women. So
that's
the scientific foundation of why little things make a big difference for women. And for men to know, if little things make a difference for you, multiply that times 100, and now you've got a woman.
Got it. Dr. John, we have a caller on the line. Can you take a question?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Hi.
Area code 678, you're on the line.
Hi. I was wondering, as many of us are remarried and got married later in life and have been used to running our own show, so to speak, through career or just, being very independent, do you have any advice for how to dance with each other, the ebb and flow? It seems like my husband and I butt heads a lot in who's going to be in control of the situation, who's going to manage it, who's going to execute it. Do you have any words of wisdom for how to take turns, so to speak, being in charge when you're, really an adult?
Yeah,
you
want to be
in charge
of your life. Absolutely.
Right.
And generally, it's not even just that you've been divorced and you're getting back together. As people get older, they often want to be more in charge of their life. One of the things that makes younger women attractive to older men is often because women haven't gotten to, quite often, women haven't gotten to a point where they want to be in charge of everything. And older women, like younger men, for the same reason, they haven't gotten to the age where they want to really be in charge of their life. They're happy to have someone giving them guidance and direction, and particularly if they're wiser. But at a certain point, as we get older, we want to be in charge of our life. And so here I am in my marriage with my wife. We sort of understand, and we've delegated certain areas where she's in control and other areas where I'm in control. And you can do this officially, or you can do this sort of abstractly. But it was, you know, like when I would be traveling and when our children were young, and she would, you know, had a different sort of idea of what the children should eat, and I had a different idea of what the children should eat. And I used to like to bring in desserts, in moderation, but I'd bring in desserts. And she'd say, no, I don't want that. They're going to get sick with colds and whatever. And I go, well, it's too strict. And then she would come back and say, yeah, but when you're out of town and they're sick, I'm the one who has to take care of them. If you'll stay home and take care of them when they're sick, then you can be in control. Mm-hmm. I said, nope, that's your department then. And so what we do is, and it changes as we've gotten older, different areas where she wants to be more involved, but we sort of clearly go that this is more important for me to be in charge of this, areas where she feels she wants to be more in charge of this. Now, having said that, we never sort of live with anything written in stone because life is fluid. And there's like another little communication tip that's helpful, and you can basically go, okay, let's just do on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is it for you that you get your way on this? And often when she says something like an 8 or a 10 for her, it's not really that important for me. So I go, okay, I yield to the to the speaker of the whatever state. You know, I yield to her. I say, well, just do it your way. But then there's other times where, you know, I'll say, you know, this is really important for me. And if it's not as important for you, let's just do it this way. And so that's one technique of yielding. You know, some couples, they just, one person yields to the other all the time. And that may work out, and certainly in a harmonious way it kind of works out. But often it kills the sex drive. Because for the sex drive to be sustained, you really have to feel that you're in control of your life as well. There has to be a sense of authenticity. That's why typically for women, their sex drive increases around age 35, 36. Because takes about that much time for many women to finally feel like, I'm tired of being there for everybody else. I want to be there for myself as well. I want to be in control of my life. And right around that time when you're in control of your life, that also allows you to have a much stronger sex drive and a sexual responsiveness. And so that's one of the key things for keeping passion alive, is that both people have a say in what happens. And I'll just mention one other thing. I mean, it's a big, complicated subject you've asked about, but hopefully these are some helpful hints. Another one is, for women, often, and I don't know if this is you, but I'm speaking to everyone listening, is women can be very indirect about what they want and just assume the man's going to pick it up. And often he doesn't, then she feels over time that everything's his way. And then when everything's his way, then she starts becoming demanding, which will cause him to become defensive. Anybody becomes defensive when you become demanding, and anybody will become demanding if they feel like they've been yielding and yielding and yielding, and now what about my turn? So what we want to do is be a little proactive here and understand that women as a greater tendency want to yield as a way of creating harmony, but then they start becoming demanding when the man doesn't sort of acknowledge what she wants and what she likes. And what I help women understand here is that often she's very indirect in her request. She might say to her husband, let's say they're in a relationship where she cooks mostly, and she'll say to him, honey, would you like to go out to eat tonight? And his response, he'll take it literally. He just says, no, I'd rather just stay home and, you know, you can make me anything. And you know, she starts to feel taken for granted. She feels like he doesn't care. She's not important. Just by the way she asked, because if you ask a guy, would you like to do this, he'll often just take it straightforward. Would I like to? No, I'd rather just stay here and have you cook for me. Who wouldn't? But if she wants to go out to dinner, she should say what she wants. You know, you have to speak the language of men. If you find they're not speaking your language, you want to be responsible for creating the results in your life. So you just make a small adjustment, and you say, honey, I'd like to go out to dinner tonight. Will you take me? Boom. Or simply, I don't want to make dinner tonight. Let's go out and eat. Either of those two things will always work. But if you say to a guy, would you like to do this? Would you like to go on this vacation? Would you like to spend time? I'm thinking of going here. This would be really nice. Would you like to do it? No, I'd rather not. So I teach women, don't ask so much what he'd like, but tell him what you'd like, and that helps motivate men to take action. Otherwise, they become less and less motivated by the way you communicate to them.
Excellent.
So those are some hints.
Yeah. Right. Great advice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have another caller? The area code 347-843-4544. You can ask Dr. John a question. We're online for another 19 minutes here. So we welcome your calls. And call us in. Raise your hand by pressing 1, and you can ask a question. I'll call on you. Dr. John, what is the... what is the importance of what is the male hormone? Could you talk a little bit about that and how women can help raise that as far as improving their relationships with men and their husbands?
One of the most significant differences in terms of hormones between men and women is the hormone testosterone. Testosterone, men need to have about 30 times more testosterone. I mean, there's other hormonal differences. You know, women have a very complicated balance of estrogen and progesterone. Men also have that balance, but it doesn't fluctuate every month. For women, it's fluctuating all the time, which creates easily creates room for irregularities and so forth. But what does happen to men over time is that estrogen levels, due to all the estrogen they put in our animal products and all the estrogens that are in the air and the water now, men start having, as they're getting older, they're accumulating all this excess estrogen in their body, and that can also suppress his testosterone. But basically, testosterone, a healthy man needs 30 times more testosterone than a woman, and there's certain activities that increase testosterone. The first is releasing testosterone. Testosterone can be in your bloodstream, but it doesn't get utilized. It has to be unbound. It has to be released to be utilized. And what happens is when men anticipate success, or when they get messages that they have been a success, that they have achieved their goal, men get rewarded. They have an internal reward system, which is they use up their testosterone. So the testosterone gets released, and it will produce endorphins in his brain that reward him. In addition, it will lower his stress levels and makes him feel good. So this is the healthy state for men, is that if men are not productive, if they don't do things that are successful, and the only way they can know they're doing things that are successful to a great extent is if they get feedback saying that you're successful. Then testosterone gets released and his stress levels go down. Okay, so that's the real dynamic for men. But then once, let's say I've had a very successful day, this wonderful interview I'm having with you, I'm feeling very confident about it, feeling very successful. You're appreciating it. I know that it helps make a difference for people. That means that I'm using up my testosterone, and testosterone for men assists his body staying relaxed and energized. So at the end of the day, if I have a very successful day, guess what? I've used up all my testosterone. So men's testosterone levels are fluctuating all the time. And to rebuild my testosterone levels, so that I'll have plenty of testosterone the next day to release when I feel successful, that testosterone, which gives me energy, gives me motivation, it gives me health, it improves circulation. A lot of things happen as a result of that higher level of testosterone that men need. To rebuild testosterone, I need to rest. So when men come home, they will tend to want to just rest, and their brain cooperates and turns off. The difference between men and women's brains is very big difference, is that women's brains do not turn off. Whereas men can turn off their brains with a little bit of, you know, for us, we learned transcendental meditation, which was a technique to help turn off your brain,
mm-hmm.
but and which had extra benefits, we'll put it that way. But
mm-hmm.
sitting down and watching the news, for most men, turns off his brain. I mean, there's very little brain activity going on when a man's watching a football game or a news program. Unless that's his profession, then it's something different. But it just becomes a way for a man to turn off all of the serious parts of his brain where he's trying to solve problems at work. So literally the way men cope with stress is by forgetting the problems that are bothering them. And men can do this, but in order to fully forget and rebuild testosterone, you have to fully forget and relax your muscles. then your body will rebuild testosterone. But let's say a guy comes home and his wife is looking at him and she doesn't understand, why is he sitting on the couch? In her mind, it's like if it was a girlfriend sitting on the couch while she was making dinner, she'd be insulted. What's she doing? She thinks I'm going to wait on her? She thinks that I'm her slave? She's taking me for granted? Doesn't she see I need help? And this is what goes on in women's minds, is the most important stressor is that she feels she's not loved, you know, because he's sitting on that couch. And she has no way of knowing unless she hears what I'm saying, unless she reads it in my book and sees the scientific research. Instinctively, a woman cannot relate to this. Her body is very, very different. Her body doesn't run out of testosterone. It doesn't need that much testosterone. And if she was to sit down on the couch to relax her muscles, basically her stress levels would go up. Women have to be busy doing things in order to lower their stress. The problem for women is that if they're doing things and there's an urgency with those things they're doing, then it doesn't lower their stress. They have to do things in a non-stressful manner. Kind of like the Japanese tea ceremony was a perfect example of this, is you do something without being in a hurry will dramatically lower your stress levels.
For like men, an act of meditation.
Exactly, or meditation.
Yeah.
There's
right.
no time pressure. You know, you have a lot this time for. But for men, you basically have to relax your muscles. You have to do nothing and in a non-stressful situation. But if he's sitting on the couch and his wife's looking at him like he's a real jerk and she's disapproving of him and she's not giving him messages that he's such a success, he deserves to sit and rest, if he doesn't get that message, he's not going to rebuild his testosterone levels. He's going to lose his passion. He's going to lose his interest. He's going to lose his motivation. Couples don't realize these little things make a huge difference in the long run. There's a real difference between men and women, and men need this sort of downtime, and women need more communication. That's the other dynamic here, is that one of the things that, because women are so overwhelmed, because when they do things in the home, they have this sense of urgency. Their stress levels are really high. So if she's cooking a meal, for example, or taking care of the kids, but she feels stressed, then that doesn't lower her stress. It will help her to lower her stress if she can do it in a relaxed way, but it doesn't. What she needs, and this is the modern woman, has new needs, which is activities that will rebuild her oxytocin, just like men have always had activities that help them rebuild their testosterone. Women have to create new activities to rebuild their oxytocin because a woman's world has changed. It used to be that women did almost 90% of their day was nurturing activities, not for money, without urgency and emergency. And when you have those kind of activities, that rebuilds your oxytocin while you're also using up your oxytocin to keep stress levels low. But women's lifestyle isn't that way anymore. Just getting in a car to drive your kids to a class is major stressful. There's like a, you know, I've got to get there, I've got to get ready in time, I've got to get them in the car, we've got to get them in the seatbelt, we're going to go through traffic, we don't know if they're going to get there on time. All that stuff, even when we get used to it, actually has a stress reaction in women that's much higher than in men. Matter of fact, for me, it's not stressful at all. What they found is that they do averages of women and men in the workplace in situations of urgency and emergency, and women's stress levels are twice as high as men's. And if you put a woman in a domestic environment with urgency and emergency, it's four times higher for women than men.
Wow.
These are shocking. So that scenario, by the way, to be more accurate, I'll be real particular, they measured women in the workplace and they had cortisol levels, the hormone cortisol, was twice as high in women as in men. And then when women came home, they saw that their cortisol levels doubled again. So basically a woman coming home from a job, she now has a second job, which is to try to get everything done that would normally take a day to do. She's going to do it in 3 hours. That time pressure, her stress level shoots up twice as high as a woman in the workplace, four times as high as a man in the workplace. And a man who comes home and sits in front of a TV set or goes and meditates, his stress levels dramatically drop. Whereas a woman, she comes into the home and it goes up. And this is not the way life is supposed to be. The home should be the place where both men and women recover from the stress of their lives. And the love that we give each other in our relationships can have a profound effect in countering going against and solving this problem I just talked about. And that's why relationship skills are so critical today for women to understand what how men are different. So just those differences don't cause stress. Because I tell you, when a woman looks over at a guy and she feels critical that he's not helping enough, her stress levels are hitting the maximum level at that point. And at least if she understands, one, what he's doing, why he needs to do it, and two, how she can motivate him to help out more and demonstrate his love for her, then boom, her stress levels dramatically drop again.
I did not know that. It makes perfect sense, though, that a woman would want to go to work to relax.
That's right. You know, I've got women in my office. One of the ladies that does our customer service, she does part-time. And she's a lovely lady, and she loves coming to the office because it's less stressful than at home. I mean, managing children today is a big job because, you know, my mother, although it was a big job then, but it wasn't as stressful, my mother just said, go and play. You know, the world was a safe place. You weren't afraid of your children getting lost in video games or on the Internet or glued to the tube or it going out into a dangerous neighborhood. For most mothers, that hasn't been the case. You know, when I'm in these indigenous countries, or countries where there's indigenous people, the children are just all out playing with other kids, you know, and there's some parent that's supervising. There's always supervision, but it's not necessarily you having to supervise your child all day long. And that's what it's like to be a parent today. You supervise that kid 24 hours a day. That's an exhausting job. You know, this is where, you know, the old saying, it takes a village. You know, we just don't have that village anymore.
Right. It's shrank quite a bit. Real quick, John, I've got just a few more minutes here. We've got time for one more call. If you want to call in, 347-843-4544 and ask Dr. John a question, simply press 1 to raise your hand and I'll call on you. Meanwhile, Dr. Gray, I want to ask you, what is the website where people can go to get more information? And also, I have a code that I can give afterwards if you want to punch that in to get a 10% discount on your products. Give them your website and where you can go and what they can find out.
Well, they have the website is Mars Venus. That's like as in one word, Mars Venus, and .com. And in there, you'll see the first thing you'll see is I've got my 4 times a year I do a retreat, a weekend workshop. I've got one coming up March 17th around that time. And people can, we have a special for this week, which is if people sign up, they can bring a friend for free, which is really nice.
Oh, wow.
That's done out here in California. And in terms of products, what we have a store, and it's pretty self-explanatory. Today we've talked primarily about life lessons, and we talked about relationships. But actually I have a store where I list about 30 different nutritional supplements for different situations that I highly recommend for people, not to take all at once, but I have a basic wellness program I recommend to people because, you know, for a good relationship, you need to have plenty of energy. You can't come home tired and exhausted every day. For a good relationship, you can't bring the stress of the work home. Your relationship can help, but if you're stressed out, then what happens is your blood sugar levels become imbalanced. If you're a man, sometimes your testosterone levels are so low, or sometimes your estrogen levels are way too high, and there's simple supplements that can make a huge difference. For example, you know, I do all the right stuff behaviorally, but also I saw a huge difference in my testosterone levels when I started taking an herb from Thailand called Tongkat Ali, and I started doing that. Now, at 59 years old, I have the testosterone levels I had when I was in my 30s, actually 25% higher than in my 30s, and you know, your average 50-year-old man has half the testosterone levels he had in his 30s. So it's, you know, we don't have to lose this. And, the National Institute of Health talks about, you know, heart disease is our number one killer out there. And the number one risk factor for men when it comes to heart disease is low testosterone. That's it. Yeah. I mean, you know, people always think about cholesterol. That has very little. It has some statistical significance, but very little. I mean, basically, there's nobody alive over 70 who has a low cholesterol. You actually have to have high cholesterol over 70 to stay alive. It's just, and this is new research as well. So cholesterol has some significance, but it's not really the killer at all.
Right.
What is the issue is stress, and for men, it's low testosterone is always related to high stress levels and high blood pressure and all these problems. And you get your testosterone levels going again, and boom, you're much, much healthier, and you're much happier, and you have more energy. In order for testosterone levels, you take the herb, that's one thing. For oxytocin levels, there's lots of things that women can do. You know, the omega-3s, so I recommend for our kids to be smarter, and for women to produce more serotonin, a really high-quality omega-3. There's one that comes from salmon heads, and it's in a form of B vitamin omega-3, which that's called Vectomega. And anybody takes it, you're just smarter. And there's massive amounts of research behind it, but you're happier, your brain makes more serotonin. These are like such sometimes very simple solutions to sustain health, to be healthy. That's the theme of my workshop coming up in March, is the one I'm doing there is my ageless body, which is to stay healthy and to not suddenly get all these sickness and diseases as we're getting older, which starts around 40 years old for a lot of people. They just, you know, all these problems slowly start happening, and we can reverse that with the right kind of supplementation, the right kind of insight, the right kind of exercise. I'm not a fanatic of anything. You know, I have very simple exercises teaching people at any age how to stay healthy. Even if you never want to go in a gym or do any rigorous exercise, there's simple things you can do that are time-tested in all the indigenous cultures. You know, so you've got that dynamic. You've got the dynamic of nutritional supplementation. And then there's a theme that I follow, which is, I might make this a book title one day, which is called, which would be, I eat for nutrition. I'm sorry, I eat for recreation. I take supplements for nutrition. You just really can't get all the nutrition you need today. I have this wonderful superfood shake that, you know, I've been using for 10 years to get my morning nutrition. All the nutrition I need is in this one simple shake, two scoops and a glass of, you know, in a little blender, and put a piece of fruit in there, tastes delicious, and you get everything you need. You get all the amino acids for your brain to make your brain chemicals. Then I have one mineral supplement that has all the minerals, because that's the number one thing you could ever buy in a health food store that everybody needs is mineral supplementation. Organic food today, even it, doesn't have all the minerals that it had just 20 years ago. And not even close to the amount of minerals food had before 100 years ago.
You know, that's so true. And you mentioned that in your talk when I heard you in San Francisco. If you were to give people one thing they should do is to take minerals.
Absolutely right. And the same for our children. You see this epidemic of ADD, ADHD. I've seen it over and over. All the symptoms of hyperactivity, boredom, addiction to video games, and all those things that our kids are going through. These are all the symptoms of low dopamine in the brain, and that can be corrected with two supplements. One is lithium orotate, and the other is grapeseed extract. It's amazing. If people want information on any of these particular things, they can always contact me and ask me questions for free. You just go to share, S-H-A-R-E, at MarsVenus.com, and I give my answers out. I'm free. I'm happy to help people. I love helping people with this. And cool. And I don't have a full book on all of the nutritional supplements. That's why you have to kind of go to the store and read what I say about each one. But in my most recent book, Venus on Fire, Mars on Ice, if people can get through Amazon, Venus on Fire, Mars on Ice, I do go into a lot of the extra nutrition that we need in order to, in a natural way, balance our hormones without having to take hormones or even what's being called natural hormones, which really there's no such thing. Nature doesn't make hormones. Our bodies are supposed to make hormones. You can take bioidentical hormones. It can have very profound benefits for people. I don't question that at all. It's just that you're not getting to the root cause of the problem. Why is it your body making those hormones in the first place? And with the right nutrition, in every case I've worked with people, they can start making the right hormones without having to take hormones.
Right. We're running out of time here, Dr. John. If you want to hang on for a few minutes after the music, we can answer another question or just talk for a few minutes, and then we can call it a day. I really appreciate you coming on to the show, and you're such an inspiration, and thank you so much for all that you do. And I want to invite people next week to join us. We have Valerie Coleman, who's going to be talking about money, and I hope you join us then next week. Dr. Gray, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Thank you for hanging on. We sort of ran out of time there. I know we could probably talk for a few more hours and not cover nearly the information that you have. It's so extensive, and I really appreciate you sharing it with us.
I'm happy to. Did
you
want to
ask see if we have any other
questions to go on your site or something? Or are we pretty much?
I'm sorry.
Did you want to ask another question?
No, we did have someone raise their hand, and I thought they were going to ask it, but then they hung up. So if anybody has a question real quick, they want to call in 347-843-4544 and press 1 to raise your hand, I can call on you. Again, this is real quick. This is sort of the outtake moment, and it does show up in the podcast, recorded podcast, on my site. Otherwise, we'll just let John talk for a few more minutes and call it a day. So I had a question for you.
Yes.
What was the supplement for testosterone? You had mentioned there was a natural supplementation.
Yeah, it's a fantastic one. Even for women's libido, it works as well. That they just don't have to take it on a regular basis. They can just, you know, take it for a while and get their libido back, and it's not a major thing for them to keep taking. But for men, to counteract the massive amounts of estrogen that we're confronted with, if we're eating meat or chicken, pesticides as well have what's called xenoestrogens. Plastic has xenoestrogens. It's everywhere around us. So we want to do something to help our body make more testosterone if we need it. And it's not taking testosterone. I wouldn't recommend that. That actually causes your testicles to shrink, and it's not a good thing to atrophy your body. So it's called Tongkat, T-O-N-G-K-A-T, Ali, A-L-I. And it's 50 milligrams of 100 to 1 concentrate. And what's interesting is I've tested 5 or 6 other brands, and they say, they have 250 milligrams, but I don't get nearly the same effect as with this one brand. So you never know exactly what you're getting when you get these things from other countries.
Mm-hmm.
But the one I found is that the brand I have at my website has been very effective for me and hundreds of people that have given me feedback on it.
I'm going to get some of that because I've been, as I mentioned when I saw you, I'd been taking testosterone implants, and of course I was having some side effects, not hurtful, but just noticeable. And
over time, that's where it shows up. But probably you got a little belly fat from it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the estrogen. Yeah, everybody who takes the implants gets a belly fat thing.
Yeah.
Which is a sign that you're now your body. That they say that's the number one risk factor for heart disease, is the free radical damage that's produced by the estrogens that are produced from belly fat.
Right.
Not that you're going to drop dead or anything like that, but it's always good to, like, prepare and try to
make
make
me feel
right
good
balance.
There.
Yeah. And you just feel more. You'll notice it in a few days, more energy, more pep, just from helping take a little more testosterone.
Right. I'm going to get that. And also I wanted to mention, I forgot to mention,
testosterone. I don't mean taking testosterone. I meant taking an herb that helps your body to make testosterone. That's
right, the Tongkat Ali.
Yeah.
50 milligrams we can get from your website, marsvenus.com. Right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Oh, also I wanted
really
to mention that there is a discount code or a promo code, L-O-G-S-O-U-L, LogSoul number 10, LogSoul 10. If you want to punch that in, Dr. Gray's assistant has told us that you can get a 10% discount at his website for any of his products. So use this promo code and you can get a little bit off there. Fantastic products, Dr. John, and thank you for sharing them with us.
You're very welcome, and it's a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much. I hope to talk with you again in the future.
That'll be very fun.
I know you're doing a lot of these seminars and workshops. Do you know when your next public appearance is?
Well, you know, I don't. I know I do my workshop is March 19th, I think, something like that. I've got one next weekend in the Bay Area. I'm doing it with my daughter, Lauren. She has a column at MarsVenusLiving.com for the younger generation, a bit more spicy than me. I'm kind of the older generation, but she's the younger generation, and she's quite talented. And we're going to get to talk together. That'll be
How many
fun.
Children do you have?
Oh, I have 3 daughters and I have 3 grandchildren.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I bet you're very proud of that.
Yep, yeah, very proud, very happy. It's quite a beautiful part of our life.
Dr. John, I don't know how to thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. And
it's a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you, Doctor, and I hope to speak with you again soon.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye.